This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The economy, jobs, deficits, healthcare, and a blizzard of dueling facts on whose plan was the best to return prosperity to America all characterized last night's first debate between President Obama and Republican nominee Mitt Romney. At the outset, the president made his case that while recovery has been slower than everyone wants, it's on the way.
You know, 4 years ago, we went through the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression. Millions of jobs were lost. The auto industry was on the brink of collapse, the financial system had frozen up. And because of the resilience and the determination of the American people, we've begun to fight our way back.
But Romney said the president has had enough time to prove his policies would work, and it just hasn't happened.
The president has a view very similar to the view he had when he ran 4 years ago, that a bigger government, spending more, taxing more, regulating more, if you will, trickle-down government, would work. That's not the right answer for America.
The debate gave fact-checking organizations more than enough to work on, with both men repeatedly making billion-dollar statements that the other would then deny. And overall, in terms of debate performance, many analysts this morning, including Democrats, gave Romney the upper hand for an aggressive and presidential performance. Today in The Exchange, the themes from last night's debate, what was said, what wasn't, and your reaction. Let's hear from you. What sticks out from you from last night's event? What do you wish you heard that was not included? Give us a call. We want your impressions and your thoughts. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. We have two guests who are watching this debate very closely with me in studio. Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the popular website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, good morning, Laura.
Joining us from Henniker, Wayne L'Esperance, professor of political science at New England College, director of the Center for Civic Engagement there. And Wayne, thank you also for your time.
Thank you, Laura. My pleasure.
Well, overall thoughts, gentlemen, and then we'll get into some of the detail. Dean, why don't you go first?
Sure. When I watch these debates, I typically ask myself two questions. The first question is, what is the impact of the debate on the overall clarity of the choice between the two candidates? And that could be from a policy perspective, that could be from a leadership perspective, or even a temperament perspective. And I think on that score, I think the debate last night was very helpful. You got a really good sense of how these two candidates differ very fundamentally in terms of their kind of worldview on the role of government, revenue policy, a whole range of issues. So I think it was successful in that respect. And that's a good thing for voters who always say that they want a more substantive debate. And it was a substantive debate. The second question I ask myself is what is it going to be the impact on the campaign? That's more of the sort of the horse race question. And clearly, as everyone has been saying this morning, it was a very good night for Mitt Romney. He had a really difficult September as a candidate, a number of missteps. For him, this was an opportunity to reset his campaign somewhat. The question now is going to be whether or not he can do that carrying going forward, whether he can keep the momentum going. But certainly, I think it was a strong enough a performance that maybe it will quiet some of the grumbling that we've heard from Republican activists who've been very unhappy with his campaign over the last month or so, basically since the convention. For the president, these presidential debates, particularly that first debate, are notoriously difficult and full of pitfalls for sitting presidents because they typically don't want to be there. They're a little bit out of practice. They have to be very careful about looking like they're not annoyed by the whole situation. And I think maybe Obama went a little bit too far in that direction and seemed a little bit kind of sedate and sort of detached a little bit. That may have been intentional so that he didn't get baited by Romney. My guess is the next time around, he's going to come out and swing back a little bit harder. But, history is full of these debates for presidents where 2004, George Bush's first debate with John Kerry, where he just basically kept saying how hard it was to be president and was mocked pretty significantly. For that. So, not a great night for Obama. I don't think it was a disaster by any means, but I think some people thought he might have been able to put Romney away, and that clearly was not the case.
Yeah, your overall thoughts too, Wayne, both on the issues discussed, and, Dean said, hey, if you came to this not really sure where these gentlemen stood, you walked away knowing there was a clarity of choice there, but also the impact of this debate on the campaign overall. Go ahead, Wayne.
Yeah, I guess, you know, the two things I look for in a debate is much more pedestrian than Dean. First, you're looking for any just uh-oh moments, real gaffes, real mistakes, the looking at your watch in the middle of debate, the long sigh, that sort of thing. And I didn't see much of that at all. I thought they were both very, very good in terms of their performance. The second thing I look for is how is it being covered afterwards? How is the framing being done by the news organizations and the pundits and all that afterwards? Because my sense is that, for the most part, voters aren't going to come away and say, gee, you know, that $5 trillion tax question is a really important one. They're going to come away with how the debate was framed by the pundits and by the media afterwards and talk about things like, oh, gee, the president looked very tired, or Mitt Romney really performed very well. It's interesting that as much as folks have been criticizing Mitt Romney for not providing specifics, last night he provided a tremendous amount of specifics, and still afterwards the talk was he seemed upbeat. He seemed very strong and commanding. It's all about this sort of leadership style stuff instead of, you know, focusing on those specifics folks have been asking for. I thought Mitt Romney overperformed. He did very well, I thought. He was very strong. I thought the president probably underperformed. I agree with Dean. It wasn't a disaster. But I didn't think when we saw the best of Barack Obama last night, and I think that's the story going up to the next debate.
I want to invite our listeners again to join us. We really want your reactions this morning. If you stayed up late to watch the debate, what did you think? What jumped out at you, whether in terms of policy or in terms of performance? 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org. And Wayne and Dean, let's go first to Norman in Sunapee. Hi, Norman. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Yes. I watched the whole thing. I agree very much with the caller who just was on now. And the thing that got me was that, yes, Obama just didn't seem to be there in terms of talking about many of the things that Romney said and anyone would take at face value, but were often fact-checked wrong. But the thing that killed me, or bothered me about the critique, was that I thought the most telling thing, where the public is concerned, I think, polarization of the legislatures and not being able to get anything done because the vitriol and all the rest, was the response to the question that Romney made, which was so far above Obama's in terms of working with the Massachusetts legislature, which is all Democratic or mostly, and getting things done. And I think the public really is interested in that. We've heard it a lot. And I don't think any of the pundits that I heard, whether it was on Charlie Rose program or immediately after, this is all on public television, commented on that, and I think that was very telling. And I'm a Democrat. This is what kills me. But the fact is that I thought the outperformance by Romney, if in fact you believe a lot of his data and statistics, which I don't in many cases, if you believe it, I think you would be swayed very strongly as to who would be the best president for the next 4 years.
Well, Norman, thanks for calling in. And Dean, to you. So for a public frustrated with gridlocked, and Norman's right, a lot of people say, look, Congress, get it together, get something done. Norman, a Democrat, seems to say that Romney gave more satisfying answers on that score.
Right. Well, Romney made reference to his time as governor of Massachusetts and that he had worked with a largely Democratic legislature to get his health care plan through. You know, Obama's argument was that, well, when you're president, you have to have an agenda that you stand for, you present it to Congress, and you also have to be willing to say no when you think that Congress is headed in a direction that you believe is the wrong way to go. You know, my feeling on this issue is, we know all presidential candidates say that they're going to work in a bipartisan fashion. I can't think of a single presidential candidate in the last 20 or 30 years who hasn't said that. For me, the reality is much more structural. It has to do with the nature of redistricting in Congress. It has to do with the impact of technology and internet on kind of the polarization of our discourse. There are a whole range of things that affect that reality for me. So it's almost, when I hear candidates start to talk about this stuff during debates, I almost just kind of sort of let it go in one ear and out the other, because the reality of legislating and governing as president is just a very different thing. So, they can both talk about, trying to be bipartisan. I think, you know, Obama's argument was simply that, because Romney, in his mind, is not giving sufficient details, once those details are made public, that's when members of Congress start to dig in their heels. Like, you know, Romney says he's going to repeal Obamacare on day one. Well, the significant number of Democrats in Congress will probably say, no, you're not. So the reality of bipartisanship is very different than what we hear on the campaign trail.
You know what else I thought was interesting in that response? And Norman, thanks for the call. Wayne, to you, when President Obama responded to that question about how will you resolve gridlock, how will you work in a bipartisan way, the president didn't use two words that a lot of our Democratic candidates here in New Hampshire are using, and that's Tea Party. The president didn't say that darn Tea Party Congress, like you hear the New Hampshire Democrats saying that darn Tea Party legislature. What'd you make of that?
Well, I thought it was surprising. I mean, here's an issue where the president really, I mean, this is what he describes as his signature issue of his presidency. He chose to focus on this instead of anything else, right, first and foremost, and put a tremendous amount of political capital into health care reform. And so I was surprised that there wasn't a more full-throated response to the assertion that Romney made, you know, not the least of which was, by the way, Governor, you couldn't pass, you know, the Massachusetts version of Romney Care with this Republican Congress. So there were plenty of opportunities. I think a lot of folks on the Democratic side were looking for a more full-throated response, and what came was tepid.
Let's take another call if we could. Norman, thanks for that one. Carrie's calling in from Concord. Hi, Carrie. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that I find these debates to be a little confusing because the candidates spend so much time saying what the opponent will do, has done, whatever. They spend less time focusing on what they will actually do. And I think that can be really confusing for viewers.
And that whole thing in the beginning, Carrie, thanks for the call. Dean, that whole thing in the beginning about Governor Romney wants a $5 trillion tax cut. No, I don't. Yes, you do. No, I don't. Yes, I do. I have to say, I'm kind of with Carrie. I'm sitting there at home going, just someone tell me what's true, because I can't figure it out.
Right. And that's the difficulty with these kinds of engagements. You just you can't know, because to some extent it's a projection in the future. You know, Mitt Romney said at the end of his performance that he was going to create 12 million jobs as president. Well, perhaps. But there's no way to know for sure that that is really doable. So you have these competing sets of figures. There are these fact-checked organizations out there now, but even those, in some sense, have kind of been pulled under by the partisan nature of the debate, and people question whether even the fact-checking is fair. There's no easy answer to this. It's just going to be complicated. You know, voters have to do their best to find a source that they believe in and go with it.
Well, Carrie, I'm sure you're not alone in feeling the way that you do. Thanks for joining us. We'll take a lot more of your calls after a short break, 1-800-892-6477. We'll also play back more highlights from last night's forum between Republican nominee Mitt Romney and President Obama. Stay with us.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning, and more on the reaction to last night's presidential debate coming up on The Exchange, then at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show. More analysis of the first presidential debate. NHPR and the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation are accepting nominations for this year's Next Gen Award for Civic Leadership. The award recognizes the work of individuals who've made a difference in their communities. Read the complete criteria and submit your nomination at nhpr.org. New Hampshire weather today, cloudy, some showers likely, highs 60 to 65 degrees. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the NEEF Network Organizations, the statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. And from Raf Young and Pignatelli, celebrating 25 years of innovative client-focused solutions for businesses and nonprofits throughout New England, raflaw.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, reaction to last night's presidential debate. Give us your thoughts and impressions. What jumps out at you from the debate, whether in terms of performance or policy? 1-800-892-6477 is The Exchange number. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. Our guests are Wayne Lesperance with New England College and Dean Spiliotis, Civic Scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University. Gentlemen, right back to our callers. And Norm is waiting in Portsmouth. Hi, Norm. You're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
There are two things that I think people are very concerned with in this election. One is the amount of money that goes into the campaign. And the other is a concern of wanting some bipartisan action. And I'm a big fan of debates because it cuts away. I mean, there's been millions spent in both sides to create, make the other person look bad. And I think we had a good, clear look at both candidates last night. And it was a super debate from that standpoint. And Romney was the winner by far. The second thing that we saw was about what we concerned about is bipartisanism. And Mitt came out with a great statement and a clear evidence of how he's worked across the aisle in Massachusetts. So I think I'm looking forward to the other debates because it gets past all the advertising.
Well,
it's a big
true.
Win
yeah.
for Mitt.
You do see, I think what you say about you get to see the real people, Norm, right? Behind all
exactly.
those scary ads with the dark music and so forth. Thanks a lot for your call. What do you think? Couple points raised by Norm there, Wayne L'Esperance.
Well, I think he's exactly right that, you know, so much of the time that has been spent up until this point is, you know, both sides demonizing one another. And to some extent, I mean, the president is a well-known figure. He's had the bully pulpit for almost 4 years now. And Mitt Romney has been framed as somebody who's out of touch, and you know, we all know the descriptors. So last night when he comes and he looks reasonable, he looks presidential, they seem to be enjoying each other's company at different points, nodding in agreement with one another. I think it goes a long way to sort of getting past some of those caricatures and into, we hope, more substantive conversations. By the way, Norm's point about who won is a widely shared one. There were two polls that came out that I saw last night that had Romney winning, you know, in huge numbers. And if you think of us as a country that's largely evenly divided in terms of partisanship, that in one poll there was a 71-26%, I believe, spread for Romney on the win. That's really a significant blowout win for the governor.
And the question there, as Wayne's comment suggests, is whether or not that will translate into any kind of lasting change, in particularly in the battleground states, and how the two candidates are doing.
Right.
I think what we saw last night was a situation in which a number of Democratic strategists or activists or Obama supporters admitted that Romney had the better night. So the question now for his campaign going forward is, will that translate into real gains on the ground? You know, he may get an initial bump, and the question is whether that's going to continue on for the next month.
Well, and Laura, if we
yeah,
Laura,
go ahead.
Really quickly, if we go back, looking at a chart right now, we go back to 1988 to the 2008 election, and they've compiled the data of pre-debate and post-debate bumps, and the numbers are very small. And the most significant number was a 2.5-point jump, and that's it. So it's not clear that this is going to mean a whole heck of a lot in the polls. But in some places, in some battleground states, a 2-point jump is not insignificant.
Let's move, gentlemen, from performance to policy. And one of the big issues on the table last night was, of course, the debt, the federal debt, the federal deficits, which keep piling up. Governor Romney called this a moral issue, and then he ticked off the cuts he would make to restore a balanced budget.
I will eliminate all programs by this test if they don't pass it. Is the program so critical it's worth borrowing money from China to pay for it? And if not, I'll get rid of it. Obamacare is on my list. I apologize, Mr. President. I use that term with all respect, by
I like
the way.
It.
Good. Okay, good. So I'll get rid of that. I'm sorry, Jim. I'm going to stop the subsidy to PBS. I'm going to stop other things. I like PBS. I love Big Bird. I actually like you, too. But I'm not going to keep on spending money on things to borrow money from China to pay for it.
Okay, so going after the Big Bird vote there. Dean Spiliotis, what do you think, though? Some people were saying this morning, that's a compelling way to lay out your priorities. Is it worth borrowing from China or not?
Yeah, that caught my attention. I thought that was a very smart way of framing the choice. Again, the reality is to say that you're going to eliminate something on the campaign trail and actually doing it where there are vested interests in Congress and keeping the program running is the bigger challenge for leadership. But certainly, I think as a campaign strategy, it made a lot of sense. You know, this was the part of the debate, as our caller Kerry was suggesting, where it got very confusing because there really are kind of just completely competing different sets of facts about the impact of the prospective plans on the deficit and on the national debt. And so it's really going to be up for voters to decide which set of facts they find more compelling.
Well, and President Obama did make his case that he hasn't been ignoring the debt, not by any stretch. Let's hear what the president said.
77 government programs, everything from aircrafts that the Air Force had ordered but weren't working very well. 18 government programs for education that were well-intentioned but weren't helping kids learn. We went after medical fraud in Medicare and Medicaid very aggressively, more aggressively than ever before, and have saved tens of billions of dollars, $50 billion of waste taken out of the system. And I worked with Democrats and Republicans to cut $1 trillion out of our discretionary domestic budget. That's the largest cut in the discretionary domestic budget since Dwight Eisenhower.
Again, that's President Obama in the forum last night talking about the debt and his efforts to cut deficits and debt. And Wayne L'Esperance, you know, for voters who wanted specifics, well, we just heard some specifics right there from both gentlemen.
We got a lot of specifics. We've now learned about the Republican war on Sesame Street. We've seen a president in a very honest and candid way say something to the effect that it's not easy to govern. And I think that's Dean's point exactly. It's wonderful on the campaign trail to talk about how you would make, you know, this and that cut and really reduce the overall footprint of the government. But at the end of the day, when you go to Congress and fight these fights on the floor, it's much harder to do. So I think the president did a fairly good job of communicating that while talking about what he would like to do in terms of his agenda. Voters got a clear view of their two different approaches, and hopefully that helps to provide some better information when they cast their vote in November.
Let's take another call, gentlemen. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. This hour on The Exchange, we're getting your reactions to last night's first presidential debate. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. And up next is Rona in, I believe, Affield, Mass. Is that right, Rona?
It's Ashfield.
Ashfield. Yes. I apologize. It's a typo there. Go ahead.
Well, I'm going back to performance here because I was flabbergasted last night when I heard a small bits and pieces of NPR's commentators talking about how they thought Romney had won, and this morning with your guests as well. I completely felt the opposite way. As somebody, and part of what I do for work is coach people on body language and vocal language. I thought Romney was nervous. I thought he was what people are calling aggressive. I considered to be agitated. He reminded me of a high school debate team representative who it was his first time up on stage. I thought he was trying to prove himself too much. And I thought the president was presidential and calm and straightforward. People were commenting on the fact that he seemed like he didn't want to be there because he had mentioned something about his anniversary and wanting to be someplace else next year. To me, that's bringing in the human element. I thought that was absolutely absurd. So, you know, these debates are somewhat like a game show, in my opinion. You know, it's like, and I think that anyone who has been listening to the campaign knows the candidates' positions on the issues. Which is not to say that the debates can't bring in new specifics, which I think I agree that they did a little bit last night. At least Romney made some attempt at that. But in terms of the performance, I completely disagree with what everybody has to say. So that's my point.
Well, Rona, we're glad to have your point in our conversation. Thanks a lot for calling. You know, Dean Spiliotis, what some analysts called too mellow, Rona says he looked calm and straightforward.
Right. And Rona's points are well taken. In fact, I think my first comment to another family member last night was, boy, Romney seems amped. I mean, he really was really ready to
go
at
it. Quickly and rolling up a lot of facts.
And, you know, I think, and it's interesting because she is correct in the sense that the commentary last night and today was about Obama's body language, that he was looking down, that he didn't make eye contact with Romney, et cetera. You know, and you know, my feeling has always been, candidates should be allowed to write things down during debates. Just because you're looking down at the podium doesn't mean you're disengaged. So I don't find that persuasive. I think part of the problem here is increasing use of the split screen so that your every facial movement is on the screen for the full 90 minutes. So there's no kind of, okay, the one candidate's talking, let's look at him, and then now let's look at the other candidate. You're literally seeing both people simultaneously for a full 90 minutes. And you know, it's human nature to look down, to take notes, to kind of reflect, to look over. And then when you start interpreting that as a flaw, that's problematic. So I'm somewhere in between where Rona is and where the other commentators were. You know, I sort of see both points of view. I thought Romney was a little bit amped. I think he was trying very hard to seem engaged. And, you know, I think Obama, you know, probably maybe should have known that he was going to be on the screen the whole time and adjusted accordingly.
Now, I watched on PBS, I think,
yeah.
So they didn't have the split screen.
Yeah, well,
I got the more traditional.
Yeah, I jump around, so I looked at C-SPAN, CNN, MSNBC, Fox. They all were running the split screen the full time, as far as I remember. And that really kind of gives an artificiality to the performance that you don't normally get in the actual venue.
All right. Well, Rona, thanks for that call. Let's go to Sugar Hill next. Amy's waiting there. Hi, Amy. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I also feel as though these debates, you know, it's not so much the debate itself, but afterwards, becomes like a baseball game. And everything is around performance and style, and we pay so little attention truly to the substance. And so then I think that really takes voters away from the ability to think or to focus on what's really going on. And that's what's so markedly different about this tape that people forget about, the 47% $50,000 plate tape that we saw, you know, that was playing in the media before this. And all of a sudden, you know, it's about Romney winning a debate. And really, it's about the issues. And I just find that very frustrating.
Yeah, although, Amy, you know, I have to say this. Tell me what you think, Amy. We have been talking about the issues this hour. We talked about the debt, the deficit, jobs, so forth. And a lot of the folks who've called in, though, have called in about appearances, performance, impressions. So maybe that's just human nature, Amy. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's an unfortunate aspect of human nature, and I think it's something we really need to look at because it's destructive to the ultimate, you know, the ultimate outcome of how we are going to make our country better. And I think that one commentator said it very well. When we saw that video of Romney, we finally knew what he stood for. He finally stands for something because it wasn't about his performance. He actually was performing for a certain group of people, but he was really saying what he meant.
All right. And, well, Amy, let me just hold on a second, if you could. And Wayne Lesperance, Amy is saying something that many Democratic analysts were saying this morning. Where was the 47%? Everybody expected Obama to say that, and he didn't.
I think Amy's exactly right. I mean, there were a lot of sort of baked in, you know, responses, attacks, whatever word you want to use that the president had at his disposal, and I think everybody was waiting for them to come, and they just never did. I mentioned earlier about, you know, a strong response on health care. That never happened. The going after Mitt Romney on that 47%, that never happened. There were any number of those that didn't materialize, which is what part of why you hear this commentary about the president wasn't well prepared, wasn't ready. I mean, he's the president of the United States. I'm sure he's prepared. It's, you know, it's remarkable that these things just didn't come. And so I hear what Amy's saying, but you know, at the end of the day, it is what people are talking about. The sort of stylistic differences. You know, one other quick point. We talked about how there's this demonization that goes on in sort of trying to make each candidate look really badly. We've heard in the news a lot about that 47% video, about Mitt Romney's other, you know, sort of disconnect from the general public. But here he is on stage with the president as a co-equal and, by all accounts, outperforming. So to some extent, what we're going to be looking at in the days ahead is, does this help to erase that sense of Mitt Romney? Is he sort of, you know, able to start anew? And does this have any impact in terms of the polls in the swing states? I mean, there's a lot of questions that come up now as a result of this performance. And I think, you know, this is why we're spending so much time talking about it.
Real quick to you, Dean.
Yeah, just as we were talking about this issue of performance, I was thinking in my head, well, it's human nature, literally right before you said the phrase human nature. I just think that, you know, to think about the policy is an intellectual exercise. But when we watch these candidates, we connect with them on a very emotional level. And that those types of cues tend to be kind of more sort of human nature, stylistic temperament issues. And that's why so many people talk about it.
Well, Amy, thanks a lot for that call. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Now, Wayne, you mentioned health care, and that was another big topic in this debate last night. Romney came right out at the beginning and said he would repeal what he called Obamacare. And you heard the president say earlier he likes that name. Let's hear first of all what Mr. Romney said about the president's attention to health care.
I just don't know how the president could have come into office facing 23 million people out of work, rising unemployment, an economic crisis at the kitchen table, and spent his energy and passion for 2 years fighting for Obamacare instead of fighting for jobs for the American people.
What'd you think about that, Wayne? Romney making the case, hey, your priorities were on the wrong track.
This is one of those arguments that plays well with a lot of folks, particularly in the middle class. You know, the Supreme Court made its decision on this issue. The constitutional argument has been set aside. Now the argument becomes one of, was that the right place to spend all that political capital? And we can debate that, but certainly there are voters out there who are looking at the unemployment rate, who are looking at the overall state of the economy. And, you know, this resonates with them that, you know, instead of focusing on those issues, the president was focused on health care. Now, in fairness, the president would argue that that is also about jobs, by the way, and the economy, this health care issue. But, you know, this is what Mitt Romney is going to make as one of the central themes of his attack. I think it was interesting. It also helps to really demonstrate a clear difference in the vision of these two folks of what government ought to be doing.
All right. Well, let's hear what the president said in response to Governor Romney's questioning of his priorities.
We did work on this alongside working on jobs, because this is part of making sure that middle class families are secure in this country.
What'd you think about that whole healthcare exchange, Dean?
Yeah, it was a fascinating exchange. And I think Wayne's last point about the difference in worldview is really becoming clear at that moment in the debate. I noted that in my notes from last night, at that point in the debate, I actually jotted down that I really started to see these sort of larger differences in worldview. You know, for Romney, the government, what he considers to be a government-centric approach, is inefficient and expensive. It stunts job growth. And even when we're talking about the provision of healthcare, you know what Obama tried to do in this part of the debate was talk about how Romney's approach will hurt real individuals, whether it's the elderly with Medicare or the poor with Medicaid, education, all those sorts of issues. And so this is just one of those areas where there's just a fundamentally different sense between the two candidates about how to provide health care in an efficient way and in a way that nobody who needs health care doesn't get it.
Well, and there was a lot of back and forth, Dean, about, Obamacare.
Yeah.
And then President Obama would say, yes, and we modeled it after what you did in Massachusetts, Mitt Romney. And then Mitt Romney would come back and say, well, no, because it's different. And they just kept going around and around on that. I almost wanted to say, okay, you're going to have to agree to disagree, guys. Can we move on?
Right. And I think this is one area where there's been a fair bit of research. And the reality is the two plans are very similar. There is overlap in the approach and in the advisors they use to put together these approaches. Romney has made this argument about a state-focused approach rather than a national approach. But be that as it may, the two plans are very similar. So what also was interesting is to hear Romney actually talk about Massachusetts and healthcare, because as we know, during the primary, he wouldn't go near it with a 10-foot pole. And in fact, when he started to, I heard grumblings from some conservatives that he was making a mistake. So, you know, he's trying to own it a little bit now to the extent that it helps him with independence, but he really pretty much stayed away from it for the whole primary cycle.
All right, Wayne, I'll get your thoughts after a short break, and we'll take a lot more of your phone calls. The number for you to join us with your impressions of last night's debate, your thoughts on what was discussed in terms of policy or how the candidates did in terms of performance, give us your comments, questions, thoughts, 1-800-892-6. 6477 1-800-892-NHPR. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. And when we come back, more of your calls and emails, so keep it right here.
This is NHPR, where support comes from you, our members, and from New Hampshire Institute of Politics, presenting Dr. Jean Edward Smith, author of Eisenhower in War and Peace, October 11th at 7 p.m., anselm.edu/NHIOP. And The Common Man's Flying Monkey in Plymouth, presenting Loli Marquez Sterling in a cabaret show rich with Cuban influences and music this Friday. Tickets at flyingmonkeynh.com. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear from people who really make you think, like astrophysicist Brian Greene explaining the scientific theory that our universe is just one of many.
And the image that I like to have in mind is, imagine that our universe is like one slice of bread in a much grander cosmic loaf, with the other slices of bread being other universes.
No subject is too big for Fresh Air. Join us weekdays at 3 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, we sit down with New Hampshire's new Catholic bishop, Peter Labashi. You can email us your questions and comments for Bishop Labashi before the program if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. And then be sure to join us tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today, we're talking about last night's presidential debate and getting your impressions at 1-800-892-6477 or by email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Wayne Lesperance, real quick, we talked before the break about that healthcare back and forth. What's your take on that?
It's a real subtle argument for Romney to make that his plan was a state-based plan, not a federal plan. And it gets to the sort of, constitutionality of a federal mandate for healthcare. I'm not sure how much voters, the average voter picks up on on that subtlety. You know, his other point was that he worked in a bipartisan way to bring, you know, Democrats and Republicans along in Massachusetts, and the president didn't. And that may resonate a little bit more. But so much of that is inside baseball. At the end of the day, the plans are similar, and, you know, there has been a positive impact by most accounts in Massachusetts as a result of that health care plan. So not sure it was a winning argument for Romney on the specifics. But in general, that is red meat for conservatives and conservative voters. And at least, you know, at least about half, maybe a little bit more of the country still has a sort of weak view of the Affordable Care Act and is questioning it. So I get the play. I'm just not sure that that's going to result in a whole lot of movement for the governor.
One more healthcare thought from you, Dean.
Right. You noticed last night in the debate, Mitt Romney referenced the $716 billion cut in Medicare. Now, senior citizens are a very dependable voting bloc. They vote in large numbers, and Medicare is very important to them. What was so interesting to me about this particular argument is that if you remember back in 1995, when Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich went toe-to-toe over shutting down the government, Republicans were the ones who wanted to slow the rate of growth in Medicare, much as Obama wants to do with his figure. And Bill Clinton said it was a Medicare cut. So it's interesting to see that literally the same argument has now flip-flopped, and the two parties are making the opposite arguments because it suits their political purposes. But, you know, Obama's argument is that this is slowing the rate of growth. It's not a cut. That's the same argument I remember Newt Gingrich making in 1995. And now Romney and Clinton are both saying that it's a cut.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go back to our callers. And Jim's waiting in Stratford, Vermont. Jim, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, thank you. My opinion is that the Obama strategists and President Obama himself focused in this debate only on Florida, and that he embraced Obamacare. He said he loves the term, and he's proud of the term Obamacare, and he laid out very clearly the nature of the benefits of the Affordable Care Act, and he was appealing to the voters in Florida, which is a must-win state for Obama. And if the Obama campaign wins Florida, then Romney cannot possibly win the election.
What about that argument, Jim, though, that Romney kept saying Obama would cut $700 billion from Medicare, hurting seniors? Do you think that might hurt the president in Florida?
No, because I think that was purely an assertion. And the only thing that I would fault Obama about is that the Romney-Ryan plan cuts the same amount of money. It just directs it in a different way.
Wow, okay.
That's the inside baseball. I think Obama made a very clear presentation of the benefits of the Affordable Care Act to Medicare recipients. And those people who are listening to that in Florida, and those are the key votes in Florida, are going to respond positively to that, knowing that Obama also made a clear presentation of the deficits of a voucher system.
Okay.
So
Jim, I'm going to let you go because your phone is starting to fade out on us. But Wayne, what do you think?
Well, I guess I would respectfully disagree with the caller. Here's why. After the debate, I watched David Axelrod, Stephanie Cutter, both prominent folks in the president's campaign team, really spent a lot of time trying to explain that what everybody just saw didn't happen, that it wasn't nearly as bad, or it wasn't a win for Romney, that the president won on specifics, on points, that sort of thing. So if the goal was to really focus on a single state or on a single demographic, and by the way, older voters watch debates more than any other demographic as well, that message wasn't coordinated with the campaign or with all the folks reporting on it. My assertion is that folks don't remember the details of the actual debate as much as they remember the reporting after and how it's being framed. The framing on this debate has been very negative for the president, not just on this show this morning. I mean, it's everywhere. Folks are pointing out how it was a poor performance by the president. That's not a good result of any strategy they may have had in place.
Dean?
Yeah, sort of putting the larger kind of strategic focus aside, whether they really literally thought about targeting just Florida, I looked down and I noticed in my notes from last night that I made a note that at that point where Obama was talking about Medicare, I thought that was one of his stronger parts of the evening. You know, the sort of dealing with the $700 billion cut aside, the actual kind of detailing what this could mean for senior citizens and the impact on Medicare, I thought that was one of the high points for him. Whether it gets lost in kind of the larger negative coverage of his performance, that remains to be seen.
All right. Well, Jim, thanks a lot for joining us. And again, our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And gentlemen, lots of calls and a pile of emails that just came in. Here's one from Kevin, who says, could we please capital letters, have a strong moderator that can control the debate, really think this one ran away from Lehrer from the start. A big thumbs down for Jim Lehrer. What do you think, Wayne?
Well, there's been a lot of that that commentary since last night. Jim Lehrer's been doing this for a long time. He's kind of the elder statesman of the debate scene. And I think you saw Mitt Romney, I like that Dean described him as amped up. I think he dominated the format. Some formats favor, you know, some candidates over the other. And this one last night clearly was well-suited to Mitt Romney. There was a point where President Obama was in the middle of answering a question, and Mitt Romney interrupted, took over the question, and then went on and talked about what he wanted to with really no response from the president or the moderator. And I thought that was stunning that happened. That's not common. So I guess I think when you get to the point that you're criticizing the format and the moderator, you had a really bad night. And so, you know, who knows? There'll be different formats coming up. We'll see. And those of us who follow this closely, we'll pick at each and every one of them.
Although, you know, other debates coming up for sure, two more presidential debates, another vice presidential debate. But, Dean, do we know how many people tune in for these later debates? It seems like the first one is really the big one.
The first one usually is the biggest one. I mean, you could make the argument that the last one is the one that's going to be on the mind of voters right before they vote. But it does. My sense is that it does taper off a little bit. Maybe people tend to just kind of catch the commentary the next day or afterwards. But I think there's enough interest in this race in general that I think we're probably going to see good viewership. And these things have become such massive media, cultural, political events that I think that there will be a lot of discussion even with the other debates. I mean, on the moderator, you know, I thought the free-flowing format is generally a good idea. I do think that Jim Lehrer has had better go-rounds as a moderator, maybe time for him to retire, in all honesty. But, you know, typically the criticism is that the moderators insert themselves too much into the debate and are kind of too narrow in their focus. So, you know, everybody has their preferences, but I do think that he did let it get away from him a little bit last night, although it was not designed for him to be very intrusive to begin with, but it was a rough night for him, I think.
All right. Well, thanks for that email, Kevin. And here's one from Carol. I look at debates as job interviews. Clearly, Mitt Romney wants the job. Barack Obama does not have the energy or enthusiasm for the job anymore. He's seen and heard it all before. Carol says Mitt Romney has the new and fresh ideas. I feel let's give him a chance and see if he can improve things. What do you think, Wayne?
I think that's the response. That's the dream response the Romney folks would like to see happen as a result of last night. And we're hearing that. You know, at the very least, folks will take a second look or fresh look at Governor Romney. And that's what they really worked for last night. That's what that campaign was working towards. So, you know, I think Carol represents, you know, a segment of the population that the Romney folks would be very happy to hear from.
Carol, thanks for that email. And here's one from Mike. He says, one other thing. It is foolish to blame the president for the lack of across-the-aisle action. Very early in his presidency, Mitch McConnell said it was the goal of Republicans to ensure Obama was a one-term president. Mike, thank you for that comment. You know, I thought that Barack Obama would say that last night, too, Dean. I thought he would say, yeah, I'd like to work across the aisle, but... but he didn't do that.
No, he said it in a roundabout way and talking about needing to be able to say no when you feel that the extreme members of the other party are pushing you. But no, he didn't come out and say it. You know, this gets to my earlier point about kind of the structural nature of polarization in Congress. And, you know, what is it that a president really can do to reach across the aisle? There just seems to be so little middle ground at this point because in all reality, the members of Congress who used to occupy that middle ground, most of them have been knocked out. Either on the left or the right by redistricting and gerrymandering.
Let's take another call. This is Aileen calling from Windsor, Vermont. Hi, Aileen. Go ahead.
Hello. I have 4 points to make. First of all, thank you for listening to me. I couldn't believe Barack Obama yesterday. I wanted to kick him in the ass, and he's my candidate. But, you know, when Romney took so much time talking about how he worked things out when governor in Massachusetts, I wanted Mr. Obama to say, yes, and you were lucky to work with Democrats, because if you had been working with your party, you would not have made it. And when Romney came out and said, you know, this poor woman was holding his hand, and can you help me? I would have said to him, Mr. Romney, did you check if she was part of the 47% you're not going to bother with.
Oh, the 47% comes up again. Dean, what do you think? Some real passion there from Aileen. Thanks, Aileen, for calling.
Well, a lot of passion on both sides, obviously. You can hear it in the caller's voice. You know, it's interesting to me because I often hear complaints from voters that the debates are not substantive enough, and that was a substantive debate last night. And then I hear from voters that, well, how come, you know, President Obama didn't hit Mitt Romney, you know, harder on some specific statement he made out on the campaign trail? I think in reality, that's where we're going to end up coming around to in the next debate or two. We're going to have a talk about this 47% or some of the other specific things that the Obama campaign has been hitting Romney on the campaign trail, being out of touch and sort of overstepping his bounds in foreign policy. So I think just after the reaction to last night, we're going to move in that direction is my guess. Some people may like that. Some people may be disappointed.
Aileen, thanks a lot for that call. Here's an email. This is from Charles, who says, I listened to the debate to see which candidate spoke about substance and had the highest rating on the Truthometer. On this aspect, I felt that President Obama spoke with more authority and put forth the positives of his tenure so far. Charles says, I was disappointed when he did not take Governor Romney to task more strongly, e.g. when the governor accused the president of raising taxes or when he stated that President Obama took $716 billion out of Medicare. In that respect, Charles says Governor Romney won because he put the ball in Obama's court and President Obama failed to return it. That's Charles's thought. Thank you, Charles, for that email. Let's talk to Louise now, waiting in Concord. Hi, Louise. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Good morning. Well, my talk is about compromise. Mitt Romney was governor of Massachusetts, but at that time he was a moderate Republican. And compromise was part of the normal political process. But right now, we have the Tea Party, and the Republicans are unwilling to compromise. As Mitch McConnell said, I think that's who said it, that we want to make sure he's a one-term president, that is Obama, and thereby we're not going to do anything to help the country.
Louise, let me ask you a quick question since you raised this, and it's interesting because I think you're going to be our last caller. Our first caller, Norman from Sunapee, I think, said, hey, I'm a Democrat, but I really liked what Mitt Romney said about working across the aisle in Massachusetts. So Norman said anyway, he was impressed by Mitt Romney's statements on that.
Well, that's what got me thinking, and that's what made me call, because I thought you're comparing apples to oranges. That was a different time when people were compromised and able to compromise. And right now, they draw a line in the sand, and it's my way or no way, they say.
Yeah, so you're saying if Mitt Romney were governor now, he might not have as easy a time given our bitterly divided nation.
That could be.
All right. Louise, thanks a lot for calling in. Wayne, what do you think?
Well, I think this really, this call and the last email and a couple of other calls are really pointing to what folks really wanted to hear last night, and they didn't hear it. And that was, you know, that more full-throated defense of the president and going after Mitt Romney on some of these points. There was a perfect opportunity for the president to go after the governor on health care, on this sort of change of from moderate to more conservative Republican and the climate. But Dean made a point earlier which really resonated with me on this point, and that is if the president comes out in a debate format and says, gee, it's just so hard to work with Congress, it's so tough to do my job, that's not going to play well, it's not going to go over well.
Sounds like he's whining.
Right, exactly. And the buck ultimately stops with the president. And, you know, for better or worse, that's the nature of the game.
So you're saying, Wayne, perhaps it was smart for him not to come out and say, you know, those darn Republicans wouldn't do anything for me no matter how hard I tried.
I think there is a way to defend your record and to point out the challenges with a party that appears to be out of touch. That's the Democrats' argument. But you can't go on and say, gee, you know, Mitch McConnell's against me. And you just can't come off that way. And I think that the president was trying to find that careful line to walk. And just didn't get there last night.
I've got an email, gentlemen. This is from someone who identifies herself as a Democrat in Grantham. Didn't want to give her name. She says, I realize it's too late for us at this point, but after last night's debate, I really think what we need to get the economy moving is a good woman, capital letters, in the Oval Office. She says, Romney seemed arrogant and out of touch. Obama seemed to be wishing he was elsewhere. No winners, no losers, just more of the same old rhetoric. Please, someone, where is the truth? And again, I want to thank that person for the email. Didn't give a name. What do you think, Dean?
She's a Democrat. Perhaps she's waiting for Hillary Clinton in 2016. We'll see. Well, there is a literature out there in behavioral psychology and sociology about just sort of different how men and women fundamentally different in their sort of leadership styles. Women tend to work more collegially and more towards building consensus rather than, as Louise said, drawing lines in the sand. So, sure, it would be very interesting to see. I hope at some point, certainly in our lifetime, that we get to see a woman president and see if there really are these kind of fundamental differences that the literature suggests that there are. I've heard both sides from last night say, well, you know, Romney was arrogant. Then other people said that Obama was kind of arrogant and didn't want to be there. You know, this is just, again, getting back to the earlier human nature comment that, you know, you really connect with these candidates one way or another, emotionally, either for or against. And that really is, in large part, drives your vote choice, not necessarily these kinds of policy wonk issues. So,
well,
that's generally how people process these things.
And I'm going to show Wayne L'Esperance how much I just love watching this stuff and looking at it and thinking about it. I'm looking forward to the vice presidential debate. Look ahead to that for us, please, Wayne.
I think it's one of the ones that folks are really anticipating. By the way, in the 2008 election, the first presidential debate had something like 52 million viewers. And for the vice presidential debate, there were 80 million viewers. So
wow.
There's something to, well, you know, that featured Sarah Palin, obviously, and there was a lot of interest there. But I think there's something to this. Joe Biden is an interesting character in some ways in terms of the kinds of things he says and the way he says them. I think there's a lot of interest in that debate, and so we'll see some excitement there. I think you're going to see a much more assertive performance on the Democratic side at that debate. It'll be interesting. Really quickly, Laura, one little point. One of the observations that was made last night is that, quote-unquote, women's issues were lost in last night's debate. There was very little mention of them. And you know, that's something, too, to see if that finds its way in a more prominent way in the future debates.
All right. And speaking of debates, Wayne, you've got your own debate today among the gubernatorial candidates at New England College. You can watch it on New England Cable News as well. So good luck with that, Wayne. And thanks for being with us this hour.
My pleasure. Thank you, Laura.
Wayne L'Esperance, professor of political science at New England College. Dean Spiliotis, good to see you. Thank you.
Sure thing. Thank you, Laura.
Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University. This is The Exchange on NHPR.